I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's December 27th, and we have a lot to talk about. When people ask me how I go about deciding who to interview for the podcast, my answer has always been the same. I look for difference makers, people whose efforts are making a real difference in the MS community. A difference maker might be a researcher working in a lab, a clinician seeing patients in clinic, or a rehabilitation specialist helping people living with MS find ways to do things that they may have thought they could no longer do. Or a difference maker might be someone who motivates and inspires all of us by the way they choose to embrace life. My favorite conversation this year was with just that kind of a person. And judging from the many thousands of you who listened to that conversation and the feedback so many of you shared with me, it was one of your favorite conversations too. In 2007, Tyler Campbell was a running back at San Diego State, looking forward to a real shot at a career in the NFL. Instead, Tyler's life was turned upside down by an MS diagnosis. Now, for some people, that would have been the end of the story. For Tyler, it was only the beginning. In a moment, we'll revisit my conversation with Tyler Campbell as he takes us through his transformational journey from the football field to becoming a motivational and inspirational leader in the MS movement. Tyler Campbell received his MS diagnosis during his junior year at college, but chose to keep it a secret so that he could continue his collegiate football career at San Diego State University. Following his pro day in 2009, Tyler suffered a relapse and saw his dreams of playing in the NFL permanently sidelined. Now, for some people, that might have been the end of the story. For Tyler, it was really just the beginning. In addition to being an amazing speaker and ambassador for the MS movement, Tyler's also a published author. The title of his book is The Ball Came Out, Life on the Other Side of the Field. And I am so pleased to have the chance to talk with someone who I've been hoping to have on as a guest for a really long time. Welcome to the podcast, Tyler.
Hey, on behalf of the entire multiple sclerosis community, man, thank you. I mean this, y'all. This is an absolute joy for so many of us who've listened in for so long, John. This is it. This is where you want to be, and I don't take it for granted. I'm ready to rock so we can roll, baby. I'm excited.
Now, in your book, you talk about overcoming some initial missteps in your youth and finding yourself playing football at San Diego State. You're experiencing what you describe as true happiness in distinguishing yourself not only as an athlete, but as a scholar as well. Despite some past mistakes, the future is looking bright.
Yeah.
Now it's 5 a.m. on December 2nd, 2007. You wake up, you start to get out of bed, and when you stand up, you fall flat on your face. Then as you're trying to collect yourself, you realize the right side of your body is totally numb. Now, athletes spend their entire lives depending, counting on their bodies, and that includes student athletes. So there you are. You're literally laying on the floor, staring up at the ceiling. What kinds of thoughts were going through your mind?
You know, I think we all take it for granted, student athlete or not, that when you go to sleep, you know, one way, you're going to be able to wake up and do the same thing. Wake up, use the restroom, wake up, start working, wake up, put your clothes on. We don't think that for an instance, you may not be able to use your limbs to walk to the closet or to grab your clothes. We don't think like that, or at least I never did. So to go to sleep normal and wake up in the pitch black, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and just fall completely on your face, it was terrifying. The numbness, the tingling, and then the sensation of feeling like your tongue is stuck to the roof of your mouth, John. Like you want it, because then the next thing was like yell for help. And then when I try to enunciate my words and speak, and I noticed that the words weren't like coming out. So now I'm like, okay, my limbs aren't working, and now I can't yell for help. So I was like taken completely aback. Like, what is happening to my body that I have no control over? And it wasn't like this yesterday. There were no warning. So one word, absolutely just terrified, John, just terrified.
So that moment eventually leads you to your team trainer, who pretty quickly escalates the situation, sends you to the team doctor, and in pretty short order, he sends you to see a neurologist at the hospital, which in very short order leads to an MS diagnosis. What were you feeling then?
So now I'm going through the process of being alone. I think it's important for people to understand that when I was in California, I didn't have any family in California. And so normally through the mindset of an athlete, you would hope that your team doctor has an answer. My answer didn't stop at the team doctor. So he got a phone call to a neurologist. And for me, because I was no longer, you know, underneath the care of the team doctor, I was all by myself. I drove with my left hand and my left foot, which I don't encourage anybody to ever do, to go see my neurologist. It was literally like you're cast off. You've got to figure this out all by yourself. And when the doctor came in, her initial response was, you know, where's your family? Where's your, you know, where's somebody? Because that's kind of when I knew that this MS thing, that I had no idea what it was. This was kind of like serious business, because my own doctor is sitting here. She's looking at a 21-year-old college kid. And she's saying, where's your support system? Where's your parents? Where's your friend? So all of this stuff is coming. And I got even more scared, John, because I'm not having answers that people are expecting me to have for an MS diagnosis at this time. I'm alone. I'm 21. I'm by myself in the doctor's office.
Over the next year, your symptoms don't go away. In fact, reading your book, your disabilities get pretty profound for a young man at that age. Tell me what kinds of limitations, what were you facing at that point?
So cognitive issues within the classroom, as well as within the football, there were times I would just forget the plays that were called, and I would try so hard, John, to recollect, to remember and to focus and say, hey, I'm all in, I'm paying attention. And for whatever reason, I'm noticing the information's not sinking and it's not sitting. It's not sticking. I'm trying hard to remember and it's just not working. The fatigue, just getting out of bed 4 a.m. in the morning, I'm just dragging myself through athletics and academics as a student athlete. You know, I look on the surface to my teammates, they're not able to see it, but I can feel it. You know, being in a situation where you're giving your therapies to yourself, waiting for the whole locker room to clear out so nobody sees anything. So I think I worked harder at trying to keep it concealed than I did with actually trying to take care of myself, which is the total opposite of how it's supposed to be. And for me, the paralysis was still there on my. So to know what I struggled with was to know of what I was as a healthy athlete, and struggling with the fact that I'm living with this disease and I'm telling my right legs to go, or my legs to go faster, or to raise my hands to catch a ball quicker, or to react when the ball is snapped. And for some reason in my mind, I'm telling my body to do this, but it's just not responding. I had to stare myself in the mirror and just accept that I wasn't the same person. That was hard.
And if we fast forward just a little bit, that brings you back home to Texas. Mm-hmm. And in 2009, you spent a year going through what you describe as pretty extensive rehab. What was that like?
So I came back to Texas, you know, pretty much in a wheelchair. I'm relapsing, remitting is what I understand fully of what I have, but I'm also learning that my relapsing, remitting is taking me very fast. Like it's taking my body very, very fast, as opposed to some of the counterparts that my neurologist had seen at that time in 2009. And so for me, rehabilitation was speech therapy. Rehabilitation consisted of those constant drills of learning how to grip a pencil and putting your fingers in rice and relearning how to grip and relearning how to hold a pencil and tracing. I felt like I was in preschool again, or, you know, learning how to write again. And it was grueling. The one positive part I had about physical therapy was trying to get from wheelchair to walker with the ultimate goal of walking again. That was the ultimate goal. Writing by myself, talking without stuttering, talking and enunciating things with clarity. And the bright spot that I had was the fact that I was in Austin. I had family support finally. And my dad came to physical therapy with me almost every day. And though that was actually my bright spot. But other than that, John, it was just sad. I felt like I was an infant child all over again, retraining my body to do something. And it was very, very, very frustrating.
Speaking of your dad, in the foreword of your book, your dad, who I should point out is Heisman Trophy winner, NFL MVP, All-Pro Hall of Fame running back. And I might add, as someone who saw him tear up the league, and I'm pretty sure I saw some of those safeties in the secondary afraid to tackle him, one of the baddest power runners to ever play the game, Earl Campbell. He wrote in your book, "I can think of no one else qualified to show you how to bounce back from being broken than my son, Tyler." After being diagnosed with MS, I think a lot of people might feel a little broken. Yes. What's your advice to them for bouncing back?
Number one, and it's okay. And I tell people all the time, you know, because my mentor told me this and it helped me out tremendously. You know, you said broken, and I tell people we're broken so that our pieces can feed the masses. And what I mean by that is your brokenness with this disease called MS, there's a reasoning and a shining of light that can come from it that can help so many other people. I looked at Montel Williams's diagnosis as the only Black male that I knew of with MS, and him and his story in the late 90s of coming out and him being told it was a death sentence and all of those things. If Montel Williams hadn't spoken about his MS journey, John, and me being able to find it, I don't know what else I would have had to cling to. And so in the midst of what it is that you're going through with MS, somebody needs your story. They need to know about the tough times that you are experiencing. They need to know about the heartaches that you're going through, the issues that it's caused, because somebody else needs to know that they're not alone with what they feel. People needed to know that erectile dysfunction can happen with multiple sclerosis, John. I had to rise up and talk about those things so others would know that you're not a bad person if you're not alone, if you're experiencing those things. I also want to say to give yourself grace, because the things I'm talking about, that takes time to open up and talk to somebody about. And if it's not for you at this particular time, just know that it's coming for you as long as your heart is open towards you fighting to take care of yourself. It's okay to be selfish. It's okay to get angry. It's okay to be upset. I just encourage you never to lose hope, because hope is that thing that all people, when they go through something, John, no matter what it is, everybody always clings to the fact that hope, you hope that it will get better. You hope that things will change. And if you're constantly hoping, that means you constantly will build determination for yourself. And if you have determination for yourself, that means you have a positive attitude about yourself and about who you love and value, who looks in the mirror. And if you have a positive attitude, John, there's no limit to the altitude that you can have as a human being. So it's okay to be selfish and to love yourself is what I would say.
You know, when we were talking a few minutes ago about getting your initial diagnosis. Well, one of the things you mentioned is once you left the team doctor, once you left that feeling of being part of that team and had to get yourself to the hospital, how alone you felt. And then when the doctor wanted to know, when the neurologist asked you, where's your family? Where's your support? How alone that moment was for you. And you mentioned it again, feeling kind of alone until you found, in this case, Montel Williams, right? You know, the physical symptoms of MS and the cognitive symptoms of MS, we know, can be profound. But I think sometimes the toughest thing to overcome, beyond those symptoms even, is that feeling of isolation.
Say that, John. Please say that. Yes. Well, yeah, that's powerful, John. That's the part of it that I didn't understand. That's another added component of the disease outside of your physical and all the other things that present itself with the disease. And that's the thing that's why I kept in the dark, because I wasn't ready for that battle. I didn't understand that. And I didn't know how to welcome somebody else into this world as I was still trying to figure out what this new MS world was. But I do know the fact that the Montel piece, and I didn't know about the organizations that are out there for support groups, John, and knowing that there were a ton of other people that are like me, that are in my position, that are walking this walk or wheeling this walk with multiple sclerosis. I didn't know that world was out there. And if I could have known or seen that world, I feel like emotionally, I would have been in a better place with my disease and may have had an even better positive outlook with my disease, John. But I didn't know that part. But that isolation and that loneliness, and that's why being in underserved communities and being somebody who's a person of color, where there needs to be more greater discussion and more outreach in these areas, because when you know that those things exist, it changes your outlook. When you know you're not alone, John, it changes your perspective. When you have a shoulder to lean on, it changes the way you feel about yourself living with multiple sclerosis. It just does.
And I can't even imagine how many people felt a little bit better when they found Tyler Campbell, like you found Montel all those years ago. Wow. That's why the work you're doing is so important. You know, the one thing that they haven't figured out is how to give you a pill, injection, or infusion that's going to make you feel less alone. That's going to make that loneliness go away. That's going to that's going to remind you, as you found out, that there are thousands of people who were with you on that journey. And that's one of the reasons why the work you do is just so important.
That's special, because that's everything I wanted. If being able to see somebody who kind of looks like me and that they're managing or they're smiling, it could be just something as simple as a smile, or you see them and they're hugging somebody, that's hopeful, John. And that's all I remember, is just being that lonely 21-year-old and just saying to myself, gosh, I never want somebody else to be in this position. Or my heart goes out to somebody who is in that position, and maybe they can find my story to cling to, as just feeling like I've got something. I've got something to cling to. I've got something to hold to. That's it.
Well, today we can find you online. We can find you on YouTube, on the socials. We can read your book, but wasn't always like that. About 10 years ago, the National MS Society contacted the Pro Player Foundation and asked if you'd be willing to share your story at an upcoming event. What was that experience like for you?
So I'm an introvert, extrovert. I'm introvert first. I was forced to be extrovert because my father was always in the limelight. So I was forced into a world of cameras and talking and newspapers because of who. But if you introvert, I love comic books. I love reading, and I love kind of being to myself. That's who I am. And so I waited to my senior year of college to take freshman speech, because that's how introverted I naturally was. And so the ability to speak and share a story in front of all these people, that's not what I envisioned in life. That's not Multiple sclerosis put me on a totally different trajectory than what I ever envisioned. The speaking and that I never thought that, John, that's not who I am. In my heart of hearts, that's not what I. And so seeing the impact of telling the story and watching as people's lives and their hearts or hope is given or awareness is created, it was a feeling that superseded scoring a touchdown for me, John. And I had scored touchdowns all my life, but this feeling of helping and serving other people have far exceeded all of that. And so what that moment did for me was it taught me to be passionate about living a life to help others, and that that is far more rewarding than doing something personal for Tyler. And I love that feeling. I chase that feeling every day. With MS, I wake up and I chase, how can I help somebody today? Because it gives me peace. And if I have peace, that means I can fight MS too. Go ahead, John.
Well, I know the next opportunity you're going to have is right around the corner. You're going to be the MC for the National MS Society's Black MS Experience, which takes place this June 15th and 16th. What can you tell me about that event?
You know what? First off, John, it means I've been doing okay because they haven't thrown me to the wolves. You know, I did it last year. And you know, if you don't get invited back for something, that means you didn't do something right, John. So the event is special, right? Because it's a community, our community, that needs further education, that needs a greater level of awareness, a community in which you learn about diabetes, you learn about sickle cell, you learn about high blood pressure, cholesterol, things that hit our community. You learn about those things day one. When you bring up MS, it's that topic that we aren't necessarily as familiar with. And so what's big about the summit is the topic of mental health, because you have to break that cycle to create room for discussion within your community with MS. So it's like you have to break through all the wounds that have been hit our community so often, so much that there's room for MS to have a conversation. How much of that mental health plays a role? You're able to see more people like myself as a person of color who are advocating, who are pushing for change. You've never heard of Dr. Mitzi. Oh my gosh, there are Black neurologists that are out there. A whole world that you don't necessarily know exists until you plunge into this MS world. If you are a caretaker, what does that look like? How do you also take care of yourself as a caretaker so that you can take care of your spouse or your friend? So it's not just the MS component of the person. This is MS community. How do you educate your workforce about what it is that you're going through? Oh, well, let's hear from somebody who was diagnosed and who was a lawyer and had to still live a life with MS. And so it's the different stories, it's the different perspectives, and it further highlights the MS society as somebody who is willing to have this space, which, oh yeah, by the way, you can continue to go to the society for further information outside of the MS summit. All of these things, John, they weren't there in 2007, you know?
I do.
For me. And that's why I'm so passionate about it.
And yeah. One of the reasons they are there is because you're the one who's bringing them to people. You're the one who has made this conversation that so many people need to hear possible. You know, today you're an in-demand speaker. Your radio show, Real Life, Real Talk. I like that name, by the way.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Real Life, Real Talk can be heard on 104.0, the Horn FM in Austin. You've written your first book. You have, by your own account, an amazing wife and children. So, real talk, how's life, Tyler?
Life is a surprise every day. You know, I'm learning. So my children are getting older. I don't hide my MS from my family. I don't shun my tough days and battles with this disease. I have a next generation of kids, my babies, that need to see this so they can be educated and understand what MS is for daddy, because I have to lean on you to help step up to help mommy. And so I think my life now is more about vulnerability and transparency than it ever has been. And those are two words that 21-year-old Tyler was extremely scared of. And now I see a therapist every Sunday, John, to help me work on Tyler with MS and with other things. So it doesn't stop, but I have a better way of coping and handling and opening up my heart to people so they can help me. I've learned how to ask for help now, you know, and I didn't know how to do that for 10 plus years of my life. I did not know how to ask for help. I've learned to be open with my erectile dysfunction. And as a result, more people have been able to help me with my erectile dysfunction issues that I've had since MS came in my life and since I was 21. You know, so the work is always there, but I truly enjoy the level of service. I truly enjoy the fact that I have my family, and life is very simple for me, because when you've been stripped from everything with MS, you never forget that. It's a privilege to walk and it's a privilege to talk. So, John, I take all 24 hours of a day and probably more than I should, because I'm complete exhausted by the time 7 o'clock hits. But it's because I know what it's like not to be able to move, not to be able to talk. And for that, I try to give life everything I have, John, everything.
Well, you can find Tyler's book, and I highly recommend that you do. It's called The Ball Came Out, Life on the Other Side of the Field. It's available on Amazon, and I'll include that link in today's show notes. You'll want to catch him on YouTube and all the socials, and you can join him virtually on June 15th and 16th, where he's emceeing the National MS Society's Black MS Experience. It's free to attend, and I'll be sure to include that link to register in today's show notes. Tyler, in the concluding chapter of your book, you write, "Life is a huge playbook that's full of audibles." I think that's the most perfect definition of life I've ever heard. And you're continuing to run those audibles without missing so much as a snap count.
That's good, John. Well, you're good, man. You're good, John.
Thank you for all you do and all you continue to do to support the MS movement. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
Hey, love you, John. Keep up the great work. You are a pioneer. A big part of who I am is because of who you are. So thank you, sir. Thank you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/278. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. And especially during the holiday season, please stay safe and make healthy choices.